Welcome to Sons of a God, a DC podcast. I'm a gun and a son of one. I'm Alex Gunn.
Something about me today made Dad really like me more. I don't know what it is. I'm Justin Gunn.
I'm Pete.
And yeah. We're going to be talking about Peacemaker Episode 6, Ignorance is Chris. If you haven't watched it on HBO Max, please do check it out right now because we're going to spoil it. But first, before we get into it, and this is not going to work as well for our audio listeners as our visual watchers, as I like to call them on YouTube. But, Justin, you got the classic S-curl going on your head right now.
Come
that
on,
looks
man.
Nice.
Guys, it's called a cameo. It's something we do in the DC universe. Boom. We got a super cameo right here.
It's very DC forward of you right now.
Now, for real, I just sat down, fresh out the shower, and wow, did my body get fully Clark Kented right now.
Yeah. I don't know. Wow. I don't know. I've never seen you and Clark Kent in the same place. That would be kind of a bummer. If, like,
yeah, I'm not Superman. I turn into Clark Kent, nervous loser.
I know DC said it was the summer of Superman, but take it easy over there, JT says.
Yeah, it's the fall of tight curls over here.
Well, I'm going to say it's the fall of Peacemaker because some big things are going down in this episode. So again, spoiler warning here, but the broad overview is the 11th Street Kids get the portal to work. They head to the DC2 to track down Peacemaker. Various things happen while they're there, including cleaning up Eagly's garbage. Vigilante finally does, in fact, find a double of himself, and he's almost exactly like himself with one major difference.
That was one of our calls, I think.
It was. Yep. We made many calls, and one of them was right. So I don't want to give us too much credit.
Yeah, fair. We do. But no, I mean, honestly, more than one. We called a lot of this stuff.
Yes, we did call a lot of this, including the big reveal at the end of the episode that, in fact, they don't call it this, but it is a Earth X type situation, meaning it is a Nazi dimension.
Run ads! No!
Peacemaker has ended up in. And at the end of the episode, as Pete is screaming right now, Adebayo is running away Buster Keaton style from a big crowd of white people who are chasing her down. I was about to say Steve Adjei. John Economos is on the floor in Peacemaker's home. Knife through his hand and confesses to Augie that they killed the alternate Peacemaker, which he really should not have done.
That was a weird confession.
A horrible thing to say out loud.
On par for his character. I think he does that all the time. Gives up immediately. Vigilante finds out the alternate Vigilante considers Peacemaker his arch enemy, and that's why he joined the Sons of Liberty. Harcourt reveals to our Peacemaker that this is Earth X, as many people predicted. The American flags in the Argus office were curled up because there's a swastika in place of the stars and the Stars of Stripes.
Yikes.
Alternate Harcourt is sending Argus to arrest our Harcourt. And there's one last thing we should talk about. Back in the DCU, Rick Flagg Sr. makes a deal with the devil, teams up with special guest star Lex Luthor, played by Nicholas Holt, who shows up here in order to track down Peacemaker's portals, because Lex Luthor knows a little something about portals, thanks to almost destroying Metropolis in Superman, the movie. Out in theaters and on HBO Max now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, look nice little plug for
the
Dan. So let's talk about this. We could probably start with the big reveals and cameos here because these are sort of like the headline moments. As Justin mentioned, how do we feel about the fact that we got this Nazi reveal, something that I want to conservatively say some of us called 6 weeks ago during the first episode, or at least in some aspects? I have feelings about it, but curious to hear about you guys.
You know, it's because we knew it so hard, and to the credit for the show, they were telling us it the whole time. It's not like they were being super secretive about it, and what I liked about it, and this is a common thing we've been saying about the positives of this season, is it's all about Chris. It's all about Chris not seeing it. Like, when Harcourt gets there, she's like,
Nazi.
Wow, really good. Nazis are invisible, is what you're saying.
Well, I don't know.
Think about that.
Them.
Every day.
You can't see them, right, Pete?
I don't know what's happening now.
I'm honestly not sure either.
Exactly. That's how they want it. That's how they want us to think.
Oh, no. I don't want to help the cause.
The idea that he was so blinded by his own issues in this universe where there are Nazi flags everywhere and he didn't notice them. Harcourt's there for like 10 minutes and she's like, this is fucked up. This is a clear, no people of color anywhere. Look, pay attention. Ignorance is Chris is the title. It's like that was a really nice part of it. And I think that helps light up Chris for the rest of the season to be mad at himself about it and able to I think that fuel will allow him to be the hero that he needs to be. So that part is really working, I think.
I think, yeah, playing with this joke of like, how could you miss all this? You know, killing your other version of yourself, seeing the fact that your brother's alive for the first time. Those things kind of could throw somebody off. But yeah, it's... I thought this episode was a blast. The show continues to be a lot of fun. I felt really horrible for Ads, who is currently running for her life. I'm really worried about our team, but I'm also, it was so happy to see them working together at the beginning of this episode, like all doing this and Economo saying like, I don't want to do this, but I'm a, you know, sucker for peer pressure.
Hold on. We're still talking about the big reveal. Do you want to just run through your notes, get it out of your system, and then we can actually talk
Pete,
about the
part honestly, here. If Pete could podcast for 60 seconds where he just layers all of his facts out there, and it was just a scream of noise, he'd be like, did my job.
Done. Got it all out.
Because I do want to still talk about this reveal. I agree with you guys that, like I think we said on a previous episode of the podcast, but I don't have a problem with guessing a twist if it's laid in there well. Yeah. And as long as the show is not structured in a way like you never saw this coming. And I don't know. I don't know what Daddy felt while he was making this or anything like that. But
Please use quotes when saying that term.
Oh, sorry. Pete is our lawyer, by the way.
Lawyer.
But Daddy felt what he was doing this. But I do think the show plays it out not... like you're saying, Justin, this is a big reveal to Chris. Everybody else catches on pretty much immediately. The only reason Adebayo and John Economos don't catch on is they're in a house the entire time. Vigilante doesn't catch on because he's very focused on finding himself. Little note there, he passes by and he's like, oh, wow, my dad's not, didn't come out as gay in this dimension. Clearly, he didn't come out as gay because this is a Nazi dimension and he would die or be thrown in a camp or something like that. So everybody is putting these blinders on except when they're not, because they just literally have not seen it yet. So that works for me. The thing that I feel like we keep punting this emotion reveal to the next episode, whatever that next episode is. And I agree with you, Justin, as long as this does play out with Chris's reaction to it and what it does with him and his relationship to Keith and Augie, as well as the 11th Street kids. Great. Have no problem with it, but we kind of need to see how that happens in episode 7, because right now it's the punchline at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Right. And it's also a crazy cliffhanger for a lot of reasons, because it's like Economos is in trouble. Ads is in a lot of trouble. You know, the look that Harcourt gives him is like, really, you didn't notice? And he just like that kind of unfolding of the flag reveal. It was just I thought it was well done. But I agree with you. Yeah. As long as this is done well, it's fine to know the cards ahead of time a little bit, as long as it works well.
And I will laud the show also, because we were all 6 weeks ahead of the series when it comes to Adebayo being like, I'm going to take a walk outside. It plays like a horror movie. You're shouting at the screen like, no, don't go outside. And it's paced out very nicely towards the end of the episode where you see the one woman driving by kind of staring at her. You're like, this is bad. Yeah. And then Keith pulls up and you're like, oh, this is getting worse. And then it basically becomes as bad as it possibly can be. I will also shout out the show, and I don't know how other viewers felt about this, but the fact that Daniel Brooks and the way that they direct it with the crowd chasing her, maybe Buster Keaton, also like Beatles style to the Beatles reference earlier in the episode, plays it out as a horrific comedy beat, I think, rather than being the absolutely awful thing it potentially could have been.
Well, that's what I want to talk about, because it's a strange idea. It is like an out of reality reaction, like with something that is very scary and, you know, really triggering for a lot of people.
Yeah.
To have it be played where, like, all of these, the idea here is that all of these Nazis on this earth literally drop everything and run out the door when they see a person of color. That's crazy. It's a crazy idea. And the fact that it's played as like the comical pinnacle of being a Nazi. And I think, to your point, Alex, that works because it pushes it into out of us thinking too much about what the danger, the real danger is for Adebayo in that situation.
Why don't we talk about the – we'll probably come back and talk about this more, I'm sure. But why don't we talk about the cameo, seeing Lex Luthor show up here. How'd you feel about that? That's a pretty big one to throw out here. I think certainly bigger than I was expecting 3 episodes before the end, though similar to the Vigilante thing. We threw out a lot of predictions there for cameos.
This feels strange to me. I don't know. The Rick Flag stuff just feels like it's a different show. Mm-hmm. So much of the show is focused on what we're seeing in the dimensional stuff and the hardcore Chris stuff and all of that. This feels so separate. And it almost feels like it's doing things that we've wanted the DC universe to stay away from, the mistakes that Marvel made, where it's like, hey, we're just laying some pipe over here. Don't mind us. And it's like, I'm watching this and it feels like, A, it's more multiverse, more than we want. The point of the season felt like we're just going to dip into the multiverse for this creative point to tell this story about these characters. Instead, this feels like, so tell me about portals. What could portals do? Portals. And it's like, okay, guys, you're clearly doing something here.
Well, I think to kind of counter your point a little bit, I do think that there is a theme of like making bad decisions in this episode, right? Where it's like, you know, Chris deciding, fuck this Earth, I'm going to go live on the Nazi Earth where I can be happy is a horrible decision. Flag kind of being pushed in a corner where he's, you know, doesn't know what to do. There's this horrible option and he says, fuck it, I'm going to go talk to Lex Luthor because, you know, the poor guy can't get a second to think. And Tim Meadows is, you know, flurry stepping in to think in the room was just, I was laughing my ass off, man. That was hysterical. But I do think that this Flag thing, similar to what Peacemaker is going through, is they're being pushed in directions that are very bad for them and making horrible decisions kind of along the way.
I like that take. That's interesting. That certainly didn't occur to me. But I also at the same time agree with you, Justin, that, and again, a lot of it depends on how it plays out in the season itself. So it's hard to judge. It definitely felt like here's special guest star Nicholas Holt, which was fun to see. A couple of notes that I'll add to that. Apparently that scene was originally going to be in episode 7, which makes me wonder what episode 7 is going to be like, that they could just shunt this over here. But also on, not to keep talking, I know Pete hates this, but on the official Peacemaker podcast, they were talking about the scene and they were like, wow, it really feels like he's giving a totally different performance here than he did in Superbad. And I agree that that was my big problem with it, is it felt like maybe he's been really hardened by prison and that's
fine. Yeah, I mean, he explains it.
It felt like a different character than it did in Superman. It didn't feel like a connection there. Well, the same way I've been complaining about, I don't feel like there's a connection between the way Frank Grillo has been playing Rick Flag Sr. across these different properties. This also felt like, could have been a different actor, could have been a different Lex Luthor. I don't see the same person in these two things.
Well, I do like the I hear you, and I think there is some real validity to what you're saying. But I also think there's a...
Holy shit, is that... Hold on, respect alert just went off. Hold on, whew, there's a crazy lights and alarms.
That's not how our podcast
works. I don't
want
to forget what I'm trying to say. So the flip side to that, though, which I think maybe... you know, I hope is a thing, is the actor choice of like, hey, man, I used to think I was this powerful, smart motherfucker. Now I've been listening to an alligator fuck in my cell every other day or whatever it is. Like, it's took him down a notch. And I kind of looked at this Lex Luthor and I was like, wow, this is kind of he's still smart. Like, he was like, oh, somebody's coming to me. And he kind of lit up a little bit. But it seemed like a pretty beaten down Lex. So I did think I was watching it being like, oh, this is a fun choice where it's like, we're not seeing the normal Lex Luthor. We're seeing kind of beaten down. I like this Lex Luthor a little bit more because it's like, yeah, dude, I know that feeling, you know? So that was kind of what I was looking
from at. From your time in a Supermax prison.
Yeah, exactly, where an alligator was humping something, you know, in the cell next to me.
With cartoon eyes, I believe, is the way to describe it.
That's the great alligator fact right there. Mm-hmm. The thing, I just feel like it highlights something. I didn't mind the performance as much as you, Alex, I think. I agree, sort of agree with Pete. Like, it feels like they're going with something's changed with him, and he has to change tones to enter the Peacemaker show from being the Superman movie. And that just highlights how it's just strange the way these two properties are right next to each other and being further connected because they're so different in execution. And it makes sense to have Flag be a bit of that connective tissue, and it feels like there's definitely a desire to make that happen. But I think it's just we're feeling the stretch of the characters trying to be like, I exist in both of these worlds because they're so discordant.
One other thing I want to throw out about the Lex Luthor thing that has nothing to do with this discussion, but were either of you guys distracted at all by what he was doing with his fingers on the table?
Yeah,
which
he was.
Felt like he was doing something there, but we couldn't actually see what it was, and there was no reveal later in the episode. So I don't know what that was. I don't know if that was an acting choice or like we're going to see the flip of that seed and Man of Steel.
Do you think it was
something.
An invisible keyboard, like a Nazi keyboard?
Ooh, because you can't see it. Somebody was taking therapy in prison and kind of using tapping or something for anxiety and kind of stress or something like that.
Maybe he's gotten into piano and he's practicing.
Ooh. It just feels like...
Like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day.
I hear you saying like this is a broken down Lex Luthor, but I feel like when Lex Luthor does something, it should be for a reason. So having a very specific movement like that, I don't know. I was distracted by it just based on knowing the character.
But can we take a moment to consider Justin's situation? Lex Luthor is in a Groundhog Day prison situation, being driven mad a little bit, and took a piano to try to calm himself down.
Do you think maybe he's going to learn a lesson about what's important in life, like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day?
I hope so.
The important thing is, do you think the alligator inmate is Andy McDowell?
Probably. That would be huge. I mean, that would be way huger than Nicholas Hoult.
I'm hoping the next cell is an alligator and an ice sculpture of Andy McDowell.
All right, the two big things out of the way. There's lots more to talk about in the episode.
Tons more.
I want to throw out the way that they jammed through this 11th Street Kids figure out how to use the portal thing was wild to me. I was sort of wrestling a little bit back and forth based on like, no, I don't want to see them fiddle around for this for a while and like try to figure it out and run into some problems or whatever. That's not fun. But at the same time, if they're like, we've got this portal. What do we do with it? Got it.
Well, here's the thing. Peacemaker uses it.
Yeah, wait. Just hold on a second. They could have just had, because I was thinking the same thing, and they did it almost purposefully the hard way.
Right.
Like, the thing on the inside is like a double abacus. I was like, make it be one button so that anyone can press the button, and it makes sense. Instead, Adebayo goes over there, and she's like, yeah, I think I saw him do it like this. And then they cut back and forth between her pressing different knobs for like 30 seconds. I was like, what? She memorized the knob placement for this? It's just such a weird choice, I thought.
I don't know. I just thought it was like one of those things where like Peacemaker was doing it kind of stupidly. So they're going to do it kind of stupidly and it works and gets them to the thing. So,
yeah, it's certainly like I'm saying, it cuts to the fun stuff, which is a good choice rather than getting stuck in the minutia. But there is some minutia, like Justin is saying, that needed to be dealt with there. Like, OK, we tried a bunch of combinations that didn't work. Let's try this one. It worked. Something like that.
I think just a one-button solution, especially coming on the heels of the Adrian's stash house thing was such a funny moment. The fact that he has millions of dollars there. It's
so
blood
funny.
Money.
All the cocaine, he's such a fun character. And stuff. So funny.
in a season where Peacemaker has had to be less fun and be such an emotional carrier for the show, it's nice that Adrian can really just be funny the whole time.
This was a good vigilante episode. Like, the whole mom thing was hysterical. The hardcore having to be like, it's not hardcore, it's hardcore, was just fun.
Yeah, very meta moment. That definitely is.
Yes.
And then the whole, oh, my other girlfriends, just, it was... That whole rant that the mom goes on was so much fun. Like, Mom, why are you still following us?
Just the Bob thing was so crazy. They must love that scene because it's long. It's hysterical. Yeah, it's pretty good. But I was like, couldn't believe it. In the real estate of this episode in this show.
Which is already so a short time. Episode, by the way. Like, yes. These episodes keep getting, I think, like a minute shorter every week. That they, to your point, that they spent like 30 seconds, a minute, whatever it was, on this mom character. Yeah, they must have been having a great time.
I thought it was hysterical. Everybody's involved. They're having a great time. Plus, when they open the door, they all get blasted with drugs, which is just so funny.
Why didn't that play out in any way? Why was nobody high on cocaine?
I thought for sure they were going to do that. And I don't know, is there... It's HBO, so you can show people doing coke.
They've shown dogs. They can definitely show people getting high on cocaine. Absolutely.
I thought for sure it was going to be. Because, I mean, they did coke. That coke went into their bodies.
100%. It's crazy that, like... It was just crazy to me that it was like, this is a setup to a joke. Why are you... Like, not even like a secret joke, like something that would take a bunch of thought. It's like the obvious comedy beat to go for, even if they're just like running high on cocaine through the quantum unfolding chamber, like tearing things apart, or
there's so much time. I feel like that bit doesn't pay off.
We gotta spend it a minute on the mob, but not everybody run high.
It's not as funny. We've all seen the coke bit. Harley Quinn did a whole thing where she was she got coked up because she was like fighting someone in the police station.
Doing coke is not the coke bit. I think the idea that they accidentally got blasted with cocaine is funny, and to see it. A payoff of take 30 seconds from the mom going around a fourth time.
How dare you? That's all comedy gold.
And have them run around, or even if it's just like Adrian, he's like, "Whoo! Anybody else get hit? I'm feeling pretty high, right? Whoa! I feel crazy." Like one of them going forward with the bit, and the other ones maybe less so. If that's what the story needs, fine. But I agree. Like they just left something on the vine there.
Yeah. On the other hand, my second favorite moment of the episode that made me laugh out loud was back to the money pile. The shot of him being like, I would never take that. That's blood money. The quick shot of everybody immediately robbing him.
Hysterical.
Very cartoony. Very funny.
So funny.
Like that.
And the way the vigilante finds out about the Nazi, where they're like having so much fun being like, and is this the same for you? Yes. And then Peacemaker's my best friend. And it's like the first no. And it's such. The way that they were jumping around and having so much fun with each other, it was nice to see him. I mean, the guy's insane and out of his gourd, but like the joy that he like found his home and was laughing at the number of
cats. And his obsession with himself was very fun. The fact that the keys work in the door, I thought was a funny, strange reveal. But this moment, I can't tell if I like it or don't.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Emoji moment from Mark, who writes, I just want to thank you for making GLP-1s affordable. What would have been over $1,000 a month is just $99 a month with Mochi. Money shouldn't be a barrier to healthy weight. 3 months in, and I have smaller jeans and a bigger wallet. You're the best. Thanks, Mark. I'm Myra Ammit, founder of Mochi Health. To To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Mark is a Mochi member compensated for his story.
What do you feel? How do you feel about saying him saying Spider-Man meme in that moment? It's a little. It's fine. Is it a flex? Is it a? Is it just like, oh, it's fine?
It's when two people are, well, you know, obviously it should be three, but still.
Very improvised to me based on what Freddie Stroma was doing in the scene. They're probably like, oh, throw that in there. That's really fun. Like, yeah, I mean, it's always a little weird when a Marvel thing is talking about Batman or Superman,
yes,
or when a DC thing is talking about a Marvel thing. I minded it a lot less here because that's what he was doing. So
yeah,
this show is very meta. It's very culturally
It talks about
in.
Pop culture. I mean,
yeah,
here's so the, here's the only thing. It reminded me of the most egregious version of this in the Marvel universe. Do you guys remember what I'm talking
Eternals?
About? Eternals. And the Eternals is a point in the Marvel timeline where they were at their peak confidence and their greatest failure at the same time. So I don't know. I saw that as a sort of playing violin on the deck of the Titanic or however that cliche Ooh. Goes, where you're what? Like, don't get cocky. This is hard what is happening here.
While we're still talking about Vigilante a little bit, I want to talk about the Beanie Babies jokes. I thought they were fun, but after a while it was like, is someone on the writer's staff like have Beanie Babies and trying to make it a thing again so they can kind of like sell their Beanie Babies? Because I liked it, but then I was like, man, they're really
There's
going
hard. There's just a lot of stuff going on there. And not that they, again, not that they actually needed to see more time to how does this portal thing work, because that's far less fun. But they probably could have cut one of these 20 or so bits that they were doing in a row and put a little more like texture of the scene or emotional something in the scene or something like that. So it's fine. Not everybody joke works for everybody. I will say, just to get back to the double vigilantes thing, I know I was in favor of this, but I do think that is the most satisfying result is him finding himself exactly like himself, just in terms of like his bit on the show being that he is even across the board. That was good. And I thought the punchline also of what Peacemaker? He's my arch enemy. Was great as well for that reveal. To throw something out at you guys that I think Pete is going to hate. What do you think the chances are they hook up before the end of the season? I think pretty good.
What, the two vigilantes?
I think they're going to have sex with each other.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I didn't think of that, and I know you think about that stuff, like, a lot.
All the
so
time.
It makes sense.
All the time.
It makes sense that you would say that. But, yes, I think that's a great – that's a win right there.
When Vigilante was like, hey, do you want to hear about alligator facts? And they all say no. He was like, that seems rehearsed. That was a fun line.
That, I think, is going to have some sort of payoff. Maybe. I don't know. I wonder if they bring together the bird blindness thing and his animal facts thing.
Oh, my God.
In some way.
Yes.
I don't know. That would be very
Tim
something.
Meadows and Vigilante together? Come on. That's comedy gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been missing Tim Meadows in this episode.
Dude, that the thinking moment was just,
That's all right. Apparently, apparently there was a lot more of that that they cut. There was just a they just kept going and going and going and having it like go out and come back in and reside and then ask for his job back and like take something from the desk and then leave and then come back. So I don't know.
That's
the thinking
fun.
Thing was okay.
Yeah. I wish that we had more fun there because I wish there was more. That scene felt like it wanted more comedy and it didn't quite have it. And for the post credit, like blooper, I would have much rather have seen that than the very awkward Harcourt Keith scene that they played at the end there, which I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, I could have done without the "I took a massive rancid shit" joke. That was
I liked her struggling with what to do.
I like that. Like, I thought that was good.
The
and
snow
him,
globe, you know, you shake it, just fun. She
yeah,
was stuck.
That awkwardness there and putting her off her game, I thought was good. But there was something about like starting off with "I took a rancid shit." It was just
she didn't know
not
what to
my
say,
type of humor,
and she panicked. So I thought it was funny.
You like more Vigilante fucking himself.
Yeah, that's fine. You're on the spectrum of humor. Vigilante fucking himself, funny. Rancid shits, not funny. And, you know, there's all the stuff in between.
Yeah, there's so
I think
much
it's,
daylight in between.
It's funny
those
for her to be talking about that, especially because it's against more the hardcore in that dimension. So
yeah, I did like also the scene of her and Keith in the car talking about Helloween being the number two band opposite the Beatles, who are running, who are
Mick Jagger and the Beatles. Jagger's
the lead singer. Also, they're spelled B-E-E-T-L-E-S in that dimension, which is fun. But what I liked about that scene is drawing that line between the way he views Harcourt from their dimension, who clearly has been put in a subservient female role, versus our Amelia Harcourt, who is talking about, like, her arc over the course of this episode is like, I'm smart. Like, I figure out things. I do more than just kicking ass. Yeah, I'm really good at this job. And you can see that in that scene, because we know what's wrong with the dimension in advance. So seeing her put it together, I thought was a really good, relatively subtle character beat without her being like, whoa, something's wrong with this dimension immediately while she's driving with Keith.
We're talking about her, her kind of, it was great to see her and Peacemaker finally kind of talk and get things out. And, you know, I love this kind of thing of her struggling with her emotions and the crying within the scene and the back and forth. I just really thought that was fantastic. And I also loved her. They yelled at each other in such a fun way, too, where it was like, oh, you wanted to talk? When we were surrounded by agents and guns, that's when you wanted to talk? That was just, I was having such a great time in that scene.
I agree. I like that scene. And they sort of half got out some of the things. I think last episode, Alex, you predicted we would see the night in question. And I hope we do get to see that in the next episode. My other takeaway from that scene was John Cena would make a great Rocketeer. Rocketeer reboot. He was sitting there in the jacket and with the jetpack. I was like, get this guy back into the 40s. Let's fight some Nazis in the real world, I say.
Wow. I do feel like that was a solid scene with some good acting. There is more to say there. Like we were saying, there were two things that I kind of took away from it. One, I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but it felt like, personally, I've been on Peacemaker's side this whole time, him being like, I love you, Amelia Harcourt. I would do anything for you. Come out of your shell. But this, I think, flipped it to him being selfish, like making this whole thing running away to a dimension about his feelings rather than her feelings, kind of like she was saying. I thought that was an interesting choice. Like a lot of the focus of the episode, he's not really in it at all. We get the rest of the cast, and we've been riding with him so hard to have that flip and be like, dude, this is actually not the time for this. You need to listen to what she's saying and then make a decision and come back. I thought that's interesting.
And also her just that kind of like whole reveal of like, I love you. And she's like, yeah, I know. That was just fun.
Yeah.
I mean, not to take it to... Oh, go ahead, Justin.
Well, I was just going to say, like, it's... I feel like this show, from one of the virtues of it, is sort of challenging that selfish male masculine perspective and being like, hey, think about other people for a second and you'll see... Yeah. And, like, that's why what I like about the way that this season is structured, assuming they continue the arc, is that it is about Peacemaker being like, I'm so mad, I'm going to go over here to this better place. And it's like, hey, that better place is much worse because you're running away from your feelings and your friends and the person that you could talk to about these complicated feelings. And you're just basically pouting with a bunch of Nazis. So like they're taking that idea and heightening it to a degree where I think it can really communicate the message to us watching.
Well, what I was going to say to take it one step further and just to put a trigger warning before the thing that I'm about to say, I think there's a pretty compelling argument that this season is one protracted suicide metaphor down to particularly the last episode. He decides to leave the world forever and leaves a note saying goodbye and kind of putting it on everybody else. And this episode, what I think we get is suicide is often seen as a selfish decision when there are people for you there and there are people to help and support you and care about you. And frankly, you know, when you are in that position, when you're considering death by suicide, that is something that does feel like the whole world is against you. Nobody cares about you. You are keeping yourself in yourself. And that's kind of what Chris is doing, certainly in this episode. He's retreating to a whole other world. So I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're dealing with, but if they are dealing with like the idea that when somebody does that act, being able to, if you had the opportunity to actually tell them and be like, hey, No, this is not, it is not better this way. It is better to live in the world that you're living with in dealing with the things with the support of other people, which you can have, even if it doesn't feel like that. You can get past that. You can deal with that.
Yeah, that's a great look, a great thought about the episode and the season.
Yeah,
I mean even that's extreme, and I do think like it's the same for running away from your problems. I mean, like you can sort of chart any section of the isolation depression spectrum, and put this episode and these characters on it.
On the other end of the spectrum, though, and just to give like another trigger warning here, I know I mentioned this in the previous episode, but it is.
What are you doing?
Well, no, it's weird to me that they haven't addressed the fact that he is, in a very sci-fi way, sexually assaulting the other Amelia Harcourt. Like, they start to brush up on that, and he mentions, like, yeah, I'm with her. We see them wake up in bed together. They're clearly having a sexual relationship, but she does not know this other Amelia Harcourt, even if she's a Nazi. She doesn't know that this peacemaker is not the peacemaker he thinks he is, so he is taking advantage of her without consent. Again, this happens throughout sci-fi literature all the time. They deal with it in different aspects. But I do think I'm worried now it's something they're just going to brush right past in favor of the greater plot. And I feel like we need to at least spend, I don't know, a little bit addressing this.
If they haven't dealt with it yet, it's a little retroactive to go back and be like, hey, but that was fucked up. Like, I mean, maybe he'll get called out for that. And certainly his Harcourt feels like she's ready to get him after that. But I agree with you. It's sort of they're a little far down the trail to come back and really own it, you know?
Yeah. And I think at this point, just the way that they're playing it, we're going to get his emotional relationship to the other versions of Augie and Keith. But I don't know about this other version of Harcourt, because she feels just like so broad and empty at this point, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And I think she's going to end up being, we had talked about maybe, or I had said maybe she's in the Sons of Liberty, but it feels like if Vigilante's going to be doing that, maybe she's going to end up being sort of a bigger villain in this group.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. What else from the episode before we talk about potentially what's coming next? Because I think there's some interesting speculation we can do there.
Well, one thing I want to talk about is the opening dance sequence and how everything seems to be lining up. And I'm really nervous about eagerly murdering everybody that we see at the culmination of the dance sequence, because we've gotten everything else in that dance sequence except for that. But Ads was the only one who is fed eagerly, so I'm hoping maybe she gets to survive, because otherwise it would just that would be too much for me.
I guess we'll see.
I mean, there's other ways to look at that. A, not as a direct metaphor.
Well,
everything
else has come true.
Well, in what way? Like, yes, the groupings. That's the point of this opening sequence. And I rewatch it every time because it gets better each time. And that's an amazing thing that they've pulled off with this show. That the opening credits become more valuable to watch the longer the show goes on. Yeah. Very cool. But I don't think it's the death at the end. I feel like it's a pile.
They're all tired, and they're all laying down on top of each other.
It's a smashing together of characters. They're creating an emotional thing there. And I feel like Eagly may be the one. We had this scene earlier where Eagly wrecks people. The Eagly is there, is not doing much right now. I feel like Eagly has to become important again. And we had the whole like eagle spirit thing that was like not really all that cool story-wise. And I feel like that must amount to something. And they've completely ignored that.
Well, but that kind of whatever that was did reveal that Eagly is this kind of like,
he's the prime eagle, baby.
The prime eagle, the superpowered, like can control all the eagles. So it's definitely an ace up the sleeve.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Let me throw you an alternate take, Pete. Shout out. What if it's not everybody lying dead under Eagly? What if it is about exactly what we've been talking about? Because I believe Peacemaker is on the bottom in the middle. What if he feels like the weight of everybody is on him and he is supporting them? And that's what we're trying to get with that final pile. And maybe the last episode.
Then why wouldn't Eagly be laying down with them? The fact that Eagly is kind of like
Eagly is separate. Eagly rises above it all.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Or I mean, a more positive version. Like they're all running to him. They're like trying to. They're piling on him to help him or something. Like there's a coming together. You could say, yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard pile.
Okay, all right. Well, one thing I want to talk about is some real funny Economos moments here. The Economos trying, he's like throwing up because things are too weird. That was hilarious.
That shouldn't have worked for me, but that to me was the funniest moment of the episode. And I think it was just like he hit the gag just right. And the fact that things being weird makes him nauseous, I just found very funny. That's all. And it was one of these things that like absolutely shouldn't have worked, but I think it's this cumulative effect of Economos this season where I'm really struck by the humor they're using with him, where they're actually letting it all come from him versus, and I know I've said this a million times, versus just like everybody ripping on him all the time, that he keeps adding weird details about himself is a much more fun way to go.
Agree, and they're really letting everybody be funny in different ways, which is even like a less outwardly hilarious character like Harcourt. She's able to, in this episode, be funny by pushing back on Adrian and stuff like that. Like, everyone's able to do their own thing, and that's hard to pull off in any show. And the fact that they are able to while also doing all this action stuff is amazing.
Yeah, even the small moment of, like, Hardcore's look at Vigilante after the mom leaves was just so much fun. Oh, just great.
Yes, I will up that scene, the fact that they, again, just kind of ran with it, and it was Vigilante being like, God, no, Mom, leave me alone. But everybody else is like, oh, yeah, really? Okay. Versus, again, ripping on him, I think, was a much more fun choice.
Also, it was so nice to give Mom a hug, you know, hi, how are you? It was, you know.
Any other moments really from the episode before we start to look ahead?
Just double checking Cheerio spelling in the real world.
Yeah, that was different. That was different over there.
Yeah, it turns out. Mm-hmm. Turns out.
All right, let's take a look ahead. I think one of the big things that we haven't mentioned here is in that final sequence where Keith pulls aside and riles up the crowd to chase after Adebayo. He shouts, "One got out, a black." I believe it was in that order. Oof. And I think that very specifically points to where we're going, because given that we're only seeing Caucasian people in this universe, I think there's a natural implication to think they wiped everybody of color out. But I think we actually have a pretty bad, I don't want to give any qualitative here, but a bad situation in terms of there are probably camps, there's probably slave labor going on here with people of color, with LGBTQ plus people, etc.
I think the hint of that is when Harcourt got like arrested, they were like saying goodbye to her like she was going to go somewhere. You know what I mean? Where they were like, oh, you got to get tested or whatever. It seemed like they were going to kind of throw her in some kind of insane jail or something.
Maybe. For doing cocaine.
Yeah, for doing cocaine. Yes, I think we're probably going to find out about that the next episode, as well as overall not big prediction, but I think we're probably even going to like jump back in time and see, maybe even get like some sort of like history of the world, history of the United States type presentation or something like that, bringing us up to the current.
Oh, you know what'd be cool is like a newsreel. Mm-hmm. We got like an old timey newsreel of like from World War II on would be very fun that Chris can watch and see all the no doubt atrocities that the peacemaker of that earth has committed. Maybe that'll help him get ready for a big fight with him going after his brother.
Well, that's also a good opportunity to do something they already did in Creature Commandos, where we saw a ton of heroes from the DC Universe dead on a field. Like, it's the same sort of thing, but we absolutely could see, like, G.I. Robot blasted apart during World War II, other characters like that having been locked up or thrown in jail by this Nazi government.
That's who we need to help ads is G.I. Robot. He loves killing Nazis. Yeah.
You know, they've got a lot of talk about a live-action Creature Commandos. Seeing them in a quick little montage here might be an interesting choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we'll get more of that. We're definitely getting, if you watch the promo for Episode 7, there's another secret character who is showing up.
I don't, because I don't want to get spoiled.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't spoil who it is here, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah. that's what I thought, too, because I did watch the preview as well. I love secrets. I vacuum them up.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else? Big Pete, what's your big prediction? What do you want to see in the next episode? Well, the penultimate.
I got to see ads get saved. Also, I'm really Economos is you know, like Peacemaker's dad is really scary close up. And that shot of him with the knife, like crawling up towards his face, was so freaky. So we got to save
scary it. About, what's scary about him, Pete? The fact that he's aged?
No. The fact that
he's wrinkled?
No. No. He's a fucking Nazi who likes killing people and has got your knife in somebody. That's fucking scary, man.
I think, Pete, you're scared of old men, but you love old women. And the, honestly, I have never thought that before, but I think that's true. I think that's true across the board.
Not true at all.
Yes, it is true.
No, it's not.
I have hours of podcast evidence that you love older women and you hate older men.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
You're going to court, buddy.
All right, Justice. Well, I'll do some N-word looking, but
don't change. I'm just saying no.
Well,
that.
If that's true, I want to change. But
why?
I just
why
there's
that's
nothing
great.
Wrong with
I
it.
Mean,
yeah. I think there is something wrong with it. Anyways, so yeah, we got to save ads, we got to save Economos, and then eventually get out of the Nazi world. But maybe after we kill all the Nazis.
I mean, two episodes left. I feel like the next episode needs to end with Peacemaker going head to head. Either I feel like this show, I'm not saying I want this, but I think this show is going to have him kill his brother before the end of the season.
Oh no.
And I don't know, I think that'll be in the last episode, but his dad may be in the next episode. We'll see.
I totally agree with that, and I think that kind of has to happen. I am curious how crazy this will get. Like, we talked about, will there be a Nazi invasion of the DCU or something like that? I kind of feel like no, maybe.
Well, here's the thing, though. All this talk of portals from Flag has to mean something.
Yes.
Are we going to get an Argus invasion into the Nazi world? Is that going to put everyone, is that going to get Harcourt back in good graces?
That's the big thing that I want to see, because, like, sorry, Pete, for the very mild spoiler, if we get one scene like this episode of Rick Flag being like moving things forward, moving the ball farther down the field to this portal plot that eventually is going to pay off in Man of Tomorrow, I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. Let's tie it, like, let's bring it back to Peacemaker in some way. Let's keep it focused on that. And I hope they do that.
Yeah.
I don't think they will next episode, but I am hopeful they will do it in the finale.
What do you think about an Avengers Endgame style portal? Everyone runs out right when our group needs it.
Ooh. Maybe. I mean,
on
that's
your left?
I wonder how much they would do that based on the end of the first season where the 11th Street Kids wrapped up the problem and then the Justice League showed up, which, mind you, I do think we need to loop back to the Justice Gang thing from the premiere in some way. I don't know how we do that. I don't know if it's them giving Peacemaker be like,
Lex
hey,
brought up the Justice Gang, so maybe they are.
Well, I'll throw out two things at you. This is like not predictions for episode 7. This is for episode 8. But like, I think we loop back to Justice Gang being like, Peacemaker, we heard what you did with Earth X. We want you on the team. And he's like, no, thanks. I already got my team. And it's the 11th Street Kings.
Yeah.
Like, that wraps it up, which would be sweet.
Another
thing they could do is do one final kick of the nuts where he's like, this is it. I saved the world again. I can get on the Justice Gang. And the Justice Gang is like, meet our new member, Lex Luthor.
Oh, wow. Interesting. That would be crazy. I thought it was going to be like, meet our new member, White Rabbit.
Woman
you saw walk out.
Yes. It could be that as well. But I feel like in some way we got to loop back and have them show up again to sort of like bring that emotional thing to a close.
I agree with that too.
So we'll see. Two episodes left. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Peacemaker, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Daddy, me no likey that earth.
No, don't. You got to use the quotes.
Daddy.
And Daddy.
Grow out your
Daddy,
front curls.
No,
they're coming
likey
back.
That earth. Is that what you meant? Peter?
And Dad, I think we find out why Pete is so scared of you. You old.
Oh, he's doing the S girl.
Oh, wow. Scary.
Trying to get
Doesn't
it together.
Work. Does not
Doesn't
work.
Work.
Yeah, that's more of like an I at best.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.